Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, 909. 2 years ago, this OceanGate disaster happened where they were going to dive to see the Titanic. And they got a couple of specials that are out, a couple of documentaries. One's on Netflix, the other one I think it was on Prime. I saw it, maybe Max, I get confused. But when you look at the analysis of this and you look at how all of this came to be, it really does make you scratch your head and wonder how this guy Stockton Rush could have ignored all of the warning signs that this was going to end in disaster. And risk what he risked to go down deep into the water, knowing that between the cracks that appeared in this one and the sounds that it was making there, and the horrific death it would be for this vehicle to implode 2 miles below sea level. It happened on June 18th, 2023. I can't even imagine the horror or why somebody could delude themselves into bringing other people down with them. I guess if you're suicidal and if you want to do this yourself, but to have other people go down with you, and I think he sold it. People paid for the right to go down here, and he assured them that it was safe, but it was not safe at all. And numerous engineers now are testifying to the Coast Guard saying it wasn't safe. I don't know if you've seen the documentaries or not, but we're going to talk to a diver here and a deep sea marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration at the University of Southampton in the UK. So I believe that's where the Titanic left. And they were on it. The irony in all of this is that they were on a trip to see the Titanic, and the same hubris that was involved with the Titanic is kind of what caused the disaster of the OceanGate vessel that was going to see it. So with that, we join John Copley, marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration at the University of Southampton in the UK. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking the time. Have you seen either of the documentaries about the OceanGate disaster?
Yes, I've watched both of them.
What is your takeaway from that? Because you do this for a living, and I just can't imagine that the Stockton Rush guy could be so blind or so delusional. I don't know. What is your thought after watching it?
Yes, I mean, these two documentaries together show us things that we really, I don't think, were fully aware of in the story when it you know, unfortunately unfolded as it did. So, for example, in one of the documentaries, and they have shared this in advance of the documentary to kind of, you know, to advertise it, they have some footage from a camera on the ship which records the people on the ship hearing a loud bang, which we now know with hindsight was actually the sound of the implosion itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then a few seconds after they hear this, they receive a text message communication that has come from the Titan submersible. And, you know, that may have added possibly to the confusion over you know, what happened, what may have happened. Because the Titan, what it shows us is the Titan was using, for starters, a very different way of communicating between the sub and the ship to how all the submersibles I've worked with and aware of beyond that operate. So normally when we're in a submersible, when we're under the ocean, we can't use radio to communicate with the ship at the surface because radio doesn't go through seawater. It's fine. Radio is great when we're at the surface and we've got an antenna and it's bobbing up above the waves. Then we can use radio. But as soon as we go underwater, we can't use radio. So most of the subs I'm familiar with, we use a kind of acoustic telephone system. So it, we're not connected to the ship by a cable or anything, but instead it takes your voice and it turns it into a high-frequency signal and it sends that out through the water, and then a microphone on the ship can pick that up and turn it back into normal speech, and you can have a conversation with it, a little bit of a delay. And in fact, when you're on the ship, you can hear this kind of chat because you hear this kind of high-pitched, some kind of squeaky, scratchy sound through the hull, and that's actually the communication. So most systems have this voice communication between the sub and the ship. And separate from that, subs have a beacon that they use, which allows the ship to track where the sub is. Because again, you don't get GPS actually in the sub, because GPS signals won't go down underwater. But the ship gets GPS. And so if the ship knows where the sub is in relation to the ship, and the ship actually goes, the ship actually tells the sub where the sub is. And that's a separate acoustic communication system between a beacon that usually has its own battery supply, separate from the subs, that's carried by the submersible. Now, what Titan did was they didn't have the voice communication system. They used the beacon system. You can encode like text messages in that beacon signal that's used to track the sub. So they only had one kind of communication link instead of the two that every other sub I've worked with has. And that text encoding in the locator beacon signal, that takes a little bit of time to decode. And so that's why, yeah, they heard this bang and they wondered what it was. But then afterwards, a few seconds later, they see the decoding of the text message on the screen that made you think, oh, that's just come in to, you know, the sub is, you know, is okay. That bang wasn't anything to do with it. So it kind of showed this, you know, that this is one way that Titan was different. And I think the other documentary, you know, which goes into a lot of the deep history into the development of the Titan submersible, shows the other ways in which it was so very different. And the thing that it laid out for me, you know, very clearly, which obviously took some piecing together, is, you know, this submersible used this material, carbon fiber, in its hull, which is very experimental for deep sea. There's only one submersible that was ever developed with carbon fiber, and that never actually dived deep prior to the Titan. Anyway, what this documentary shows is they built a scale model to test it. It failed. They built another scale model to test it. It failed. They built a full-sized hull and dived with it, and it got a crack, so they scrapped it. They built a third scale model and tested it, and it failed. Mm. And then they built the hull of the Titan that they dived in. And I think when you see that story laid out, you know, that makes it very bleak, and you wonder how did they end up going down that road.
So they were almost 2 miles down when this happened. How deep have you gone already?
Yeah, I've been to 3.1 miles deep.
Wow.
So yeah, a little bit deeper than the Titan went to.
So what type of craft were you in when you were that deep?
So that particular dive, I was in a Japanese craft called the Shinkai 6500, because it can go to 6,500 meters deep. And what's different about it is that there are three people, it carries three people, not five, and the three of us are in a hollow metal ball. So it's titanium hull, and it's a sphere, because that's very good at distributing the pressure evenly, so that the whole of that hull, and titanium is fantastically strong, of course, the whole of that hull is under equal compression. There isn't any tension in it, it's under compression. So that's a design that many submersibles, particularly the ones that dive really deep, use. What was different about Titan was the design there was to take that pressure-resisting sphere design and to make it bigger to get more people in it, cut the sphere in half and stick a tube between the two halves. So you end up with more space for more people. Now, there have been submersibles that have used that kind of design. There were a whole load of submersibles in the 1960s called the Perry-class submersibles. And they were like that. They were like the balls fitting to the tube section in between. But they didn't dive very deep. None of them went deeper than about 3,000 feet. So that was what was really one of the things that was really different there.
For people that don't understand, if you can, we're talking to John Copley, marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration at the University of Southampton in the UK, about the OceanGate disaster and also about the two-year anniversary coming up and also about his ocean exploration. Talk about the pressure at 2 miles and 3 miles beneath the ocean, what it's like, if there's any way you can explain it.
Yeah, I would have to do this. I seem to remember that I had to explain it to someone once, and I did the sums, and at about 3 miles deep, I think it works out the pressure on the outside of your hull. Imagine if you have a person wearing stiletto heel shoes, okay, and so all their weight is going through that narrow heel. And the pressure that's all over the surface of your hull is the equivalent to 17 people. Imagine them kind of sitting on top of each other's shoulders in some crazy stack, and the person on the bottom is wearing stiletto shoes, and it's the pressure through the tiny heels of those stiletto shoes. And that's over every square inch of the outside surface of your hull.
So it would be, I don't know, you said 17 people, and you're figuring, what, 100-something pounds each?
Yeah, and over a tiny area. Through that heel,
right?
You know, so it's
phenomenal pressure through that heel, but that's over the entire surface of the vessel, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So when something like this would implode, and I don't want to get too graphic here, or anything, but death would be instantaneous. I'm thinking.
Absolutely, yes, okay. Yes.
Like not even know what happened.
Indeed. Well, that's certainly one point of view. I think there may be a legal case that is considering another position at the moment, so we have to be a little bit careful here, perhaps.
And of course, nobody will ever know. But
no, well there is also, in one of the documentaries, I think they both showed that the sound of the implosion was recorded, of course. Mm-hmm. So there is that record of it being heard on the actual ship that's in one of the documentaries. But actually, in the other documentary, there was an underwater microphone operated by NOAA about 900 miles away, and that picked up the sound of the implosion. And when you have a look at the kind of the waveform, the shape of the sound, it's a double band. I think accident investigators may be able to use that information based on what they're then looking at with the wreckage to understand what happened. And it's, it may be that the one part of the hull failed, and that may be the tubular section and the failure of this carbon fiber material. And then the second bang is then the shockwave hitting these end caps, these titanium hemispheres that they have on either end of the tube section. And I think that's possibly consistent with the recordings of the sound. So that does actually test.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Absolutely. It's over incredibly.
And you mentioned a stiletto heel. How big of an area would have to fail for the entire thing to go?
It depends on the nature of the material, really, because if the pressure is distributed really evenly, then the whole thing is under compression. Mm-hmm. And some materials are really good at resisting compression, mm-hmm. but they're not very good at resisting tension. So glass is a great example. You know, you could actually, if you made a really thick and very, you know, almost perfectly spherical kind of glass hollow ball, that would actually be quite effective for diving into the deep ocean. You know? It's very good at resisting even compression. But glass, of course, we can break glass pretty easily. Mm-hmm. It's not very good at tension, which is if we hit one bit of it harder than any force acting on another bit of it, you know, that puts it into tension, not compression. And so, you know, it does depend on the material. And what we don't know is, well, what I think the investigation has clearly been taking great pains to piece together, is what happened with this carbon fiber material that was used for the midsection of the hull. And that's not something that's used normally in deep sea submersibles. There was one back in the early 2000s. There was a hugely experienced submersible designer called Graham Hawkes. Mm-hmm. And I've actually dived in another submersible, which is one of the men that he created over the years. And he developed a very different kind of submersible with the goal of getting to the ocean's deepest point in it. And it was called the Deep Flight Challenger. That actually did have a carbon fiber tube section hull. It was very different to how it worked to other submersibles, but it did have that. But that project didn't go anywhere. He was backed by a billionaire adventurer who unfortunately passed away in a plane crash, and the project kind of stalled. And then, you know, Hollywood director James Cameron was the next person to get back to the deepest point. I think interest kind of faded away. But as far as I know, that's the only hull that's ever looked at using carbon fiber, and that hull was never dived deep on a test or anything like that to see how it behaved.
Let me take a break. We got a jumping off point here because we've talked about the OceanGate disaster. I want you, John Copley, when we come back, take us down there with you, what that's like, because I got to tell you, just the thought of it makes me freak out of being 3 miles in this tiny vessel, 3 miles below the ocean surface. I can't even imagine it and what it's like to be down there and why it's important that you do go down there. John Copley, our guest marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration at the University of Southampton in the UK. We saw the documentary about the Ocean Gate, and it got us to thinking about just what it's like to go far down in the ocean. If you have any questions, comments, 504-260-1870, I'll pass them along. I can't even begin to imagine that. It freaks me out. We'll take a break, come back, WWL. 9:31, 29 till 10. Jordan Fiegel and I saw these documentaries about the Ocean Gate, and then that got us to talking about deep sea diving. And we found John Copley, a marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration at the University of Southampton in the UK, who's nice enough to spend an hour with us. He's been down deeper than the Ocean Gate submersible went. That was 2 miles. He's been down 3, correct, John?
That's right, yeah.
So take us through it, because it's not like jumping in a pool. It takes a while, right? How do you even prepare? Let me take you a step even further back. Why in the hell would you want to do this?
So it's a great way to explore and try and understand more about the majority of our planet that's actually covered by deep ocean. Mm. So, you know, more than half our world is covered by water that's more than 2 miles deep. And yes, we have amazing remotes like robotic vehicles that these days we use a lot in ocean exploration, but there's still a place for, you know, humans getting into the deep ocean. You know, our eyes are the best cameras, you know, our brains are the best computers. And when you're going to put that in the environment, you know, and you're right there figuring out what's going on, you know, there is perhaps some benefit still to doing that. So how does it happen? You know, what's involved? Let me ask it this way,
John. So you get into that. Well, there is some prep involved. How do you prepare yourself before you make the dive? Then I'll ask you about the dive itself.
Sure. So exactly. So before you get into the submersible, there's a lot of planning, because you're out there on a big ship. You know, in my case, it's a scientific research ship. You're on an expedition that's been years in preparation. There's a lot riding on getting the measurements, collecting the samples that people want for the science that they're trying to do. And when you're in the sub, you're there on behalf of everybody on that expedition. So what you do in planning is you meticulously plan the to-do list for that dive. It's like, okay, here's where we're going to drop down. Okay, here's where we're going to travel to. This is what we're going to try and pick up. This is what we're going to look for. This is what we want to measure. And we've got kind of an order of priority to do this, because at any point, you know, we might have to abort and come back or whatever. So it's like, you know, all of this is carefully planned out. So oddly enough, when you actually climb into the submersible, in a sense, all that has been done.
Well, but wait, let me take a step back even further, John. Are you doing any physical prep to get ready for this? Are you running? Are you doing anything like that?
No. Oddly enough, because we stay at normal surface conditions inside these vehicles. Mm-hmm. So we're not exposed to, you know, particular physical extremes that require, you know, a high level of fitness or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, David Attenborough, who is a TV kind of, you know, he makes these amazing wildlife documentaries. Mm-hmm. You know, he's dived in these things in his 80s, you know, in terms of age. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as you can get in and out the thing, then you'll be okay inside the thing.
So how big is it? You climb into this submersible, which is, to give us an example,
well,
it would be like...
Yeah, the whole vehicle might look like the size of a big minivan, but the part that carries the people is a much smaller chamber within that. So typically, the one that I was in on my deepest dive, there were 3 of us, and we're in this hollow metal ball, and it's just over 6 feet across inside. You can almost reach out with both arms and touch both sides of the thing.
Almost like a sedan, like the interior of a sedan?
Yeah, although it is a sphere. So, you know, the inside is lined with all the instrument panels and all that kind of thing. But the bottom of it is the bottom of a ball, and you are all actually kind of sliding, you know, up against each other in the bottom of this thing. So it's pretty cramped in there, and there's 3 of you in there, and you're in there for quite a few hours. But it's part of the overall vehicle looks much bigger. It has an outer kind of cowling, but that's not a hull that's resisting pressure. That's just to keep stuff tidy. And then if you strip that away, there's this hollow metal ball at the front. And then behind it, you've got the batteries, the hydraulics. You've got this blocks of buoyancy material. And then all of that's kind of got a skin then put over the top of it.
How long does it take for you to go down 3 miles, and how quickly do you do that?
Yeah, so you sink. Rather than driving down with propellers, mm-hmm. you actually make yourself heavier than water at the surface, and you sink like a stone. Although, actually, it's a little bit more like a sycamore tree seed, that kind of spins around and around. If you actually watch the compass when you're going, you'll actually see that you're kind of spiraling down. Mm. But you sink, and you sink at about 120 feet a minute is a typical rate, and that's kind of like that's pretty standard, because that's pretty much how something that is heavier than water that has this kind of shape. That's how fast these things sink. That's like your terminal velocity for sinking. So you sink down, and so it took us to get to 3 miles. That took us, about 2 hours, 40 minutes, 2 hours, 45 minutes, something like that.
So
and there's a big change.
Once you're down there,
there's a big change as you leave the surface. So at the surface, you're bobbing about in the waves, and then you sink below the grip of the waves, and it becomes much calmer once you're out of the reach of the waves. And the big thing is it's sunlight when you start out, and then as you start to sink and beyond the reach of the waves, the color outside gets bluer and bluer and bluer and a deeper blue until it's the deepest blue you could possibly imagine. It's like a luminous black. And then eventually you'll be on the reach of any sunlight that you can see with your eyes.
So you have cameras and you have lights, and that's how you see what's going on outside?
That's right. And the whole thing is really limited. What limits us most is not things like oxygen. We have plenty on board in case we did get stuck. We've got many days emergency supplies. What limits you most on your dive and the planning of things is actually your battery capability. Because you're not connected to the ship at all, you're taking all your power with you on a battery. And so actually on the way down, unless you're interested in studying something that's in that interior mid-water bit of the ocean that you're sinking through, we actually keep all the lights switched off. We're trying to save power for the work we want to do when we arrive on the ocean floor.
So what did you see when you're down 3 miles deep? I don't know if there's anything down there. Is there nothing down there? Is it teeming with life?
Oh, well, where I went, yes, it's absolutely teeming with life, and that's why we were diving there. So the kind of ocean floor of our world is just as rich and varied as the world above the waves. So, above the waves, we've got great plains, and we've got mountain ranges, and in terms of life, we've got savanna, and we've got rainforest. There's so much variety in terrain and in life and all the rest of it. And the same is true of the deep ocean floor. It's not all like one type of environment. It's not all just a flat plane of mud with a few things crawling on it. I mean, some of it is a flat plane of mud with a few things crawling on it. But then there are mountain ranges. There are incredibly hotspots of life. And I actually study these hotspots of life that we get on the deep ocean floor, and in particular, ones that we get around undersea hot springs. So they're very much like the geysers of Yellowstone, but underwater, and not erupting steam, but erupting incredibly hot, mineral-rich fluid. We're talking sort of 700 degrees Fahrenheit, and it doesn't boil into steam because of the pressure of the ocean floor, keeps it liquid. And around these undersea hot springs, you get these incredibly rich colonies of deep-sea animals. And that's what I study. And we find these hot springs dotted around the world's oceans. And then we go to a new area where we haven't explored them before. And we find new species of animals in that region at these hot springs. And much of my career has been kind of filling in like a jigsaw puzzle of life around the world. Different bits of the deep ocean, different things living at hot springs in them. And that tells us more about patterns of life on our planet at that scale.
Like what kind of animals? I'm just curious, John.
So the ones that I went to that were 3 miles deep, which are the deepest in the world, those have got millions upon millions of shrimp, okay, but very unlike the shrimp we're familiar with that we might have in, a tasty dish or whatever. These are a kind of deep-sea shrimp. They don't have eyes on stalks, okay, but instead they have a patch on their back, that's actually a light sensitive patch of kind of skin, if you like, because these deep sea hot springs actually glow incredibly faintly, too faint for a human eye to see, but the shrimp can pick up the glow with these light sensing patches on their backs. and they live by there are bacteria that grow in the minerals in the hot spring water, and the shrimp garden bacteria on the gills underneath their carapace, and they scrape them off and eat them, and they swarm around these undersea hot springs in their millions, that is quite a sight.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to John Copley, marine biologist, professor of ocean exploration. I'll get it out. The University of Southampton in the UK. One thing that distresses me is what's been found on the ocean floor, and it's plastics. And I worry about that with the ocean. And I also want to go into ultimately what, you know, we talk about exploring outer space. Ultimately, what can we gain by exploring the oceans of the world? 942, 18 till 10, traffic now, WWL.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.